is it about red roof inns that emits a sickly green glow? Hello, everyone. Martin Zender here. Let me adjust my settings here, my camera angle at a Super 8. That's what it must be. It must be the Super 8 chain that their lighting must emit some kind of green hue that makes me look green here, but I'm agreeable with it if you are. Wow, at the end of an amazing road trip, let me bring you up to date a little bit where I am, what happened. It's been a blessing of God. I thank Him for it. I'm in Columbus, Ohio. I'm talking quiet because I have a feeling that people are still sleeping because it's early, and so I don't want to impose on anyone's personal time, their down time. I'm in Columbus, Ohio. We finished last night, late night. The last I talked to you, I was in Lyman, Colorado. We were in Lyman, or is it Lehman? Still don't know the answer to that question. And we had a long haul the next day across half of Colorado, the entirety of Kansas. And my son Luke is not a fan of Kansas. In fact, he's happy for Dorothy that she got whisked away by a tornado from Kansas. I don't say this to disparage anyone from Kansas. I actually think it's a beautiful state. I really do. Going across Kansas, it's amazing. This beautiful ribbon of highway called Interstate 70. And I am a big fan of the interstate system. I'm a huge fan of roads. I'm amazed that we can get from point A to point B so easily. The roads are hard. They're packed down. Unlike the old days, they had mud and you could barely get through, especially after it rained. Then we went through half of Missouri, and we perched ourselves in Columbia, Missouri. Why, you may ask? For an epic reason, which is associated with the photograph that you see on this video, or should I say associated with this video, and that is a photograph of me at Mark Twain's boyhood home in Hannibal, Missouri. That's right. We wanted to go to Hannibal, Missouri, to see Mark Twain, because my sons and I are fans of literature, and we forced Mushroom, native of China, to be a fan of literature, and we hammered into her skull the greatness of Mark Twain. And there I am standing in front of his boyhood home in Hannibal, and right nearby was the home of Tom Blankenship, who provided the character of Huckleberry Finn. It was Mark Twain's neighbor, and that house is also still intact. We went in there, the original fireplace, original floor, original beams on the walls, fantastic place. And I remember just standing there feeling such pleasure at hearing Luke explain to Mushroom why Tom Blankenship was a lot of fun, because his parents were lax, he could do anything he wanted, he didn't go to school, he could fish and hunt at his good pleasure. And so he was the guy to hang out with because all the other kids had strict parents. So what a trip this has been. I hang out at the house of A. Enoch and at the house of Mark Twain, two of my favorite writers, the two epic writers who have influenced me the most, Mark Twain and A. Enoch. Missing was the boyhood home of Ernest Hemingway, also an influence on my writing style, and Henry Miller. I don't know where Henry Miller was born, but I know that Hemingway is from Illinois. So I laid in this bed last night over here, and I just thanked God for my sons. My youngest son didn't join us here, my oldest and my middle son. But they're all intelligent, extremely intelligent men. And I thank God for giving them to me on loan, of course. I understand that. I thanked God for my daughter-in-law, who was so much fun, so enjoyable. Oh, got to tell you this first before I tell you what else happened there. the next day, we went. No, it was the same day. It was the same day. We went to the Mississippi River, hung out on the shores of the Mississippi in Hannibal, where Mark Twain hung out. And we went to the land of Lincoln. That's right. From there, we went to Springfield, Illinois. And we got there late. We saw Lincoln's home there. where he lived for 17 years after he married Mary Todd while he was still a senator before he went to Washington. Excuse me. And then we saw his tomb in Springfield. His tomb is amazing. I want a tomb like this. I used to think that I just wanted thrown into a common grave. Put me in a pine box and forget about it. Ladies and gentlemen, after seeing Lincoln's tomb, I changed my mind. It's a bit of a rotunda. And as you go around, you see statuary of different phases of Abraham Lincoln's life. This is what I want. I want statues erected depicting various highlights of my life. One of the statues I want, me sitting at a desk at a Red Roof Inn with a cup, styrofoam cup filled with coffee in front of this microphone. That will be just one of the statues. I'll let you know of the other ones that I want. And then you go around and there's this giant red marble slab with the name Abraham Lincoln. Of course, I want my name Martin Zender on there. And Mr. Lincoln is buried 10 feet below that. I would settle for 8 feet. That's fine with me. And then we headed home. And now this is where we ended up, in Columbus. I'm here, there, at a different place, and it's over. It's over. I thank God for the protection he afforded us. I thank him for the meetings I was able to have on the road. I thank him for my daughter-in-law, as I said. I also thank him for everyone. It's so easy to thank God for your families, your children, your immediate blessings. I also pray for my enemies last night, which I do at night, like I told you. And it's one thing to pray for them. It's hard to make yourself want good things for your enemies. But I did that last night as well. And not my enemies. No, you're right. I need to correct that. The people who don't like me, people who hate me, I prayed for them because I don't have any enemies. I personally don't have any enemies. Nobody's my enemy. But I have people who hate me. So I prayed for them and I wished well for them. Because everybody's got problems. Everybody's got problems. I think I covered everything I wanted to tell you before I introduced the topic du jour. And I'm going to be happy to settle down. I've got to settle down this winter and write. I mean, listen, it's been a miracle. I mean, I feel, for me personally, that I've been able to get this show out, get my newsletter out during this road trip. I've been very thankful for that because our days have been packed, stuffed. It was not relaxing. We didn't have one day off. And I was not able really to spend rarely a moment alone. Just enough time to do the show, enough time to write in the early mornings. I would wake up before Gabe, wake up about 5:30. I'd be sitting there typing away while he was sleeping. Fortunately, he's a sound sleeper. Now, I need to settle down and get some books written. So, what did I do? I arranged 2 more meetings before the end of the year. God willing, I'm going to be in Springfield, Missouri, not Springfield, Illinois. That's the land of Lincoln. And not Hannibal, Missouri. That's the land of Mark Twain. I'm going to be in Springfield, Missouri sometime in December and Indianapolis. And that will close out the year speaking wise. I think, I hope. I'm just a sucker for people who want me to come to their homes. I'm a sucker for it. So let's get a little gathering at living room. This is so biblical, this living room thing. I love this format. So that's what I want to do. I'm going to finish out the year with 2 meetings. I'm a sucker for it. The 2 witnesses. Okay. No. This is interesting to listen. The 2 witnesses are 2 people. The lampstand is used to describe them and the lampstand and what else? Olive branches. But these, again, are representational things. These are the things God saw, the things that those things are described as, interpreted as by God, are literal. So the witnesses are 2 individual people. Now, there are 2 witnesses, and I believe that the Antichrist will have 2 different aspects. This is the nugget, the kernel I want you to take from this. The Antichrist, as I said last week, will be into the aspect of Pharaoh. Because he will be a political ruler. Pharaoh was a political ruler. Not real keen on the religious aspect, Pharaoh. Not an extremely spiritual man. The Antichrist, on the other hand, has two titles. The Antichrist has two titles. He's the man of sin, as the King James calls him. I believe Concordant there has man of lawlessness. But he is also the Antichrist. As the man of sin, he is a political ruler. Better to say the man of lawlessness. He makes laws which look expedient and righteous and just, but they are underneath them. There's a megalomaniac wanting political clout, power, and fealty. And in this aspect, he's Pharaoh. There's another aspect, the Antichrist. Anti doesn't mean instead, it means against. We'll be getting into this in detail when we get to the section of scripture detailing him, and it's coming up. In this, he's akin to Baal, a false god. He's a false god. He usurps the place of Christ. He stands in instead of Christ. And he demands worship. He not only demands political fealty, he demands worship. And in this, he's like Baal. And the title that suits this desire of his to be worshipped, he enters into the temple and declares that he is God. We're talking Baal now. And Israel's problem, one of their problems all through history, was Baal worship, false god worshipped worship. This is why the first commandment of God to them is that you shall have no other gods but one. And there will be no image cast of any god besides me. The only legitimate image, icon of God, it's the Greek word for image, I-K-O-N, of God is Jesus Christ. God is so careful with this because any other icon will lead you into a false apprehension of who he is and his character. And God hates this, and I hate it. So I hate icons. Something physical doesn't have to be the only thing that's an icon. A teaching of God is an icon, is a false image of God. When the teaching leads us away from the true character of God. So the man of lawlessness will be a political ruler who will demand fealty. The Antichrist, same person, the Antichrist will be a needer, a wanter, demander of worship. He will be a poser, a spiritual poser, and he will demand the worship. And in this capacity, he is best seen in type as a Baal figure, an image that has the audacity to walk into the holiest place of the temple and claim that he is God. How ironic that Israel's history does not change until Jesus Christ actively puts his spirit in their hearts. They worshiped Baal. They wanted a king. And in the end time, this is in their history, in the end, they will also want an earthly king, just like Saul was to them, head and shoulders above the rest. They will lust, be drawn inexorably, fatally to power. To someone who has power. That's why they wanted to make Jesus a political savior. And they were fatally drawn to Baal. They were fatally drawn to false gods. Israel, in the end times, will once again fall for the political ruler and the religious ruler in one personage, the man of lawlessness, who I believe is alive today.